Welcome to episode 127 of the Sports Geek Podcast, and our first in our sports startup series featuring Famous Fan.
Welcome to the Sports Geek Podcast, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals. And now, here's your host, who once was mayor of Lakers Locker Room on Foursquare, Sean Callanan.
Thanks, DJ Joel. Yes, I was once mayor of the Lakers Locker Room on Foursquare. I stole it from a fellow Sports Geek podcast guest, Shane Harmon, who was on episode 52 and episode 23. I'm now back on Swarm. I'm giving it another go, and you'll find out soon enough why that might be. My name is Sean Callanan, and you are listening to the Sports Geek podcast. You might be doing that on the Sports Geek website, sportsgeekhq.com. You might be doing it on iTunes. You might be doing it on Stitcher or SoundCloud, or you might be doing it on your favorite podcast app or mine. I use Pocket Casts. As always, let me know where you are listening to, when you're listening to. Either send me a tweet at Sean Callanan, send me a message in the Sports Biz Slack community if you've signed up, or use the old-fashioned method of sending me an email, sean@sportsgeekhq.com. Really looking forward to this episode. It's a little bit of a departure from our standard interview and content with sports executives. It's effectively I'm going to start a mini series of podcasts focused on sports startups. And the first one is going to be with Josh Byron, co-founder and the chief hustler at Famous Fan out of Boston. I connected with Josh a few months ago, earlier this year, talking about his product, Famous Fan. We connected on LinkedIn and then had a bit of a discussion via Skype, and then lucky enough, he was able to attend a seat, and so we met in real life and been discussing the product. And one of the things that we were talking about was how he's been going about getting Famous Fan out in the market, and how potentially I could help him do that. And the idea for this sort of series has sort of been something I've been thinking about for a while, because I do get pitched a lot of different products and a lot of different startups, and I'm trying to figure out a best way to tell you about it, and why wouldn't I use the podcast? So being a Shark Tank fan, as you would know if you've listened to my episode with Mark Cuban, episode 62, I'm really a big fan of both the format and the show itself, where if you don't watch Shark Tank, a entrepreneur comes up and they pitch their product and they pitch for investment. Now, in this case, I'm not going to get Josh to pitch for investment, but I like the format. So in the way this is going to go, and it's going to go with other sports startups over the journey, is that he's going to pitch what Famous Fan is, and I'm going to play the role of a shark, asking the questions for you, the Sports Geek podcast listeners. So it's a great chat. It's good to sort of dive in on the startup side of the business, doing a bit of consulting with startups with Chunky Media. So sort of taking a bit of that skill set across into this podcast interview. At the end of the podcast, stay tuned. There'll be some extra info on Famous Fan, but you can check out that at either famousfan.com, or you can go to sportsgeekhq.com/famousfan. So just write that one down to check it out later after the podcast. But here is my chat with Josh Byron, co-founder of Famous Fan. Very happy to trial this new version of the Sports Geek podcast, inspired by episode 62 with Mark Cuban, who's on Shark Tank every week, trialing new businesses and new pitches. I thought I would do one for the sports technology business world. First up, we've got co-founder from Famous Fan, Josh Byron, to tell us all about Famous Fan, how it works, what it's supposed to do, and how potentially you, as a listener, could use Famous Fan for your team. Josh, welcome to the Sports Geek Podcast.
Hey, Sean. Thanks a lot for having me.
So first up, you're trapped in an elevator. You've got 60 seconds. You're standing next to a sports executive. What's your elevator pitch for Famous Fan?
Sure. Thanks, Sean. So at the average sporting event, nearly 66% of time is actually spent not playing the game. And during that time, the teams will actually look into the crowd and they'll find fans to put on the Jumbotron. When a fan gets up there, it's a really unique, natural, candid, exciting moment, one that just the reaction from fans are just truly visceral. And what they do is they pull out their phone and they try to capture that moment. And you know, you'd be surprised to know that nearly 10% of fans at the average event actually share this experience, and then they have no way of getting that content. So what we do at Famous Fan is we work with teams to gather this content, typically the feed from their control room, and we make it available to fans in a way that is shareable and free.
Yeah, so I mean, everyone's been to a game where they've done kiss cam or dancing cam or bongo cam, and the fans, you know, it's easy. From a fan engagement point of view, it's great. From a game entertainment point of view, everyone's got their eyes to the big screen, and yeah, they want to share that they're on the big screen. And as someone who has been on a big screen or two in my time as a fan, people want to share it. So tell us a little bit about how the process works. What happens? So I've gone to a game, I'm on the screen dancing next to someone, and I want to tell everybody. Where does Famous Fan fit in?
Sure. So recently we actually executed a partnership with both the San Antonio Spurs and Duke Blue Devils. And through that partnership, what we found is by putting up the URL during the game and having one or two PA announcements to supplement that, fans are able to then access that in the venue. And although the content's not available at that time, we need to receive it from the teams afterwards. We're able to take in emails and information that will allow us to go back out to fans once the content is available. But quite simply, if you're at a venue, to your point, and you look up and you see yourself, you'll oftentimes see that URL or you'll hear the PA announcer in the venue announce the URL. And you can go to your phone, go to famousfan.com, or in the Spurs case, nba.com/spurs/famousfan, enter in your email, and then you'll be contacted by us when that footage is available, typically within 3 to 6 hours of the end of the event, all dependent on what our partners are looking for.
So effectively, the next day, the fan can go in, they go to the part of the game, whether it was the first quarter, the third quarter, when they remember that they're on the big screen, and they can effectively just scroll through all the footage that was on the big screen to find their moment in the spotlight.
Exactly, yeah. So the PA announcer will typically say something like, were you on the Jumbotron today? Remember when you were and go to, and then the URL. So we actually break it out by pregame, first quarter, second quarter, halftime, third and fourth for basketball, and you know the according time breaks for other sports. And yeah, to that point, we get rid of everything else. There's no game tape, nothing that would violate a licensing agreement, just fan shots. So if I were on in the second quarter of a Spurs game, for instance, I could go on, maybe watch 2 minutes or so of streaming footage, see myself, press pause on this video, and then it would actually generate a set of HD still images from that moment that I can then share. Basically, I click on a thumbnail, superimposes onto a Jumbotron, and allows me to share that content for me.
Okay, so with that we'll come back to the product itself in a little bit. I want to dial back a little bit and get a bit of the background of where the idea came about and those kind of things. So first of all, can you give us a little bit of a background and I guess the genesis of the idea itself?
Sure, absolutely. So I'm from Boston. Don't hold it against me. And I'm a Celtics fan. I go to a lot of Celtics games. In fact, I'm a season ticket holder. And one of the things that I noticed was how exciting how excited fans reacted when they appeared on the Jumbotron. They pull out their phone, they try to capture that moment, and it disappears. I called up the Celtics myself, in addition to a few other teams, and I asked them how I could get that content. And they told me that it actually wasn't available for a bunch of different reasons. One team even offered to sell me a CD at the end of the year, which would be $50 and 80 hours of footage. So that's sort of where I took a step back and said, maybe we could do something to get fans this unique content. And that's essentially how the idea was born. We then, being a couple entrepreneurs in Boston, we reached out to developers and tried to figure out, well what would something like this look like? A, how do we build it? And again, what could we build that would solve this problem? And we decided on a product that allowed us to take in a video, such as the video feed from the Jumbotron that lives in the control room, and cut that video into thousands of photos. So the way that it works in practice is if we get a 40-minute video, we will cut that using our proprietary technology into about 20 to 25,000 photos. And then when a user is watching a part of that video, you know, say, for instance, the second quarter, and they see themselves, they press pause. And at that pause, that is a unique marker that will then talk to our server and give that individual 10 photos, essentially one photo from the moment they press pause, and then 10 from the next 2 seconds. So each basically four photos a second that are all a little different that can then be superimposed onto the Jumbotron and shared for free in a way that, again, promotes the brand of the team and anybody else that might be on that Jumbotron.
So you can make sure that you get the photo where your eyes are open and you're smiling and your fist pumping and not the awkward eyes closed looking the other way photo that might be there in all of those photos that you've sliced up.
Yeah, great point. You know, I think if you happen to get one in the venue, that's exciting. But that picture is going to be of you looking up and taking a photo of yourself. That's not going to be the initial candid, exciting moment. That's the one that people really want to share. And that's the one that that fans have not been able to get access to until now.
So, famous fan, you used the word we. Who else is part of the team in driving famous fan?
Sure. So this business was started by myself and my business partner, who I went to high school with. His name is Dana Lampert. He is an entrepreneur here in Boston. We have pretty unique skill sets that are very different. You know, Dana, career entrepreneur, started a business out of school, which he's run now for about 8 years, and then came into this business with myself. And my experience, sort of separate from that, I had been working for larger companies, financial firms, investment banks, and always knew that I really wanted to do something entrepreneurial, and ended up going to graduate school to study entrepreneurship at Babson in Boston. And that's kind of how this all came together. And Dana and I, we were at games together. We noticed this, sort of trying to observe our surroundings and think of what we could do to solve this. And thus Famous Fan was born. We then, as I mentioned, we built something that we felt could go out and test this idea. And then from there, we went out, raised a little bit of money, enough to get through our proof of concept. And now proud to say we've built a product. We have clients, paying clients, and we have a product that is backed by real metrics that show that this works to not only engage the fan and improve the in-arena experience, but it can actually be a monetizable asset for teams as well.
So we'll dive into that. So you've built, for those who don't know and not in the startup and app development scene, so you built an MVP. So it's not a most valuable player, as we know in sports, but a minimum viable product. And that was pretty much just build out the piece of the puzzle that you need to show that it works. And so you built that initial version, taking the video, slicing the video, and the front end interface to allow fans to jump on, find their photo, superimpose that over potentially a branded Jumbotron, and then share it on their social media. Say, hey, look at me! I was on the Jumbotron at the game last night. So that was the first point. And are you in the process of building that pre having any clients on board or having anyone sort of bite down on the idea? How did you, because it is a bit of chicken and egg kind of thing when you're developing that kind of thing. Do you build out the product or do you go secure the first client? What was the tale for you guys?
Yeah, that's a great point, Sean. I think it's important when you have an idea and you're trying to bring it to market or even validate it, you just want to test and learn. You want to try, you want to iterate, see what works and see what doesn't. Ideas are great, but they're cheap, and it's really about execution. And we knew that we had what we thought was a good idea, but until you go out into the marketplace and you test it and you get user feedback and you determine if teams are willing to pay for it, then you have nothing. So we just wanted to do little things in order to incrementally move this forward. And fortunately, that's what we were able to do.
So take us through, you've already mentioned the Spurs. How did that relationship come about and sort of getting that pilot project up and running?
Yeah, so you know, to your point, in terms of how do you start, initially we came out the gate and I was trying to charge people for this. I said, this is a great idea. It does this, this, and this. It allows fans to capture moments. And I wasn't really looking at the big picture, and I didn't realize that while that might seem good to me, that's nothing without data. So I kind of misrepresented or misunderstood the market at that point. And I quickly realized that if I was going to move this forward, we needed to get a test in place. So I started approaching a few teams, and namely the NBA and the NHL. And I was trying to get a team to agree to a free partnership, a pilot that we would run. And I was looking at teams in my market in the Boston area. I was looking at teams further away. And ultimately, we settled on the San Antonio Spurs for a number of reasons. One, fantastic organization, very committed to the fan experience. They liked the concept from the start. We also felt that they were a potential client should this go well. We thought that they would ultimately pay for it, which is another criteria. And we also wanted to test outside of our market. We felt that if we had a great test in Boston, that might not be completely indicative of whether or not we were successful, since, well, it is our hometown, so we could manipulate the results or certainly be accused of doing so. So figured, go to Texas, work with a team that was definitely playoff bound, get as many games as we could, and we found a team in the Spurs who were very, very willing to support this initiative, and they've been a fantastic partner for us so far.
I think there'll be a few people who are listening who would be nodding their heads because they're pitched constantly with all these different app ideas or integrations. And like you just said, sort of making that initial mistake going, my product's awesome, all you've got to do is this, not realizing all the pieces of the puzzle that have to line up to get it right. And data is such a big one of those to be able to say, yes, it's going to deliver these outcomes for us that we do want. So going into that Spurs pilot project, you talked before about, being offered a CD of all the footage. Operationally, how does it work? How do you have that turnaround? Because one of the things I find when people are pitching into sports teams is they underestimate the resources involved on the team side, who are very stretched from a resource point of view, to implement anything. So, where does Famous Fan sit on that? What do the teams have to do to have Famous Fan rolling out and turning around every single game, putting all the vision up? What does someone internally have to do to kick things off with you guys?
Sure. Yeah, I know. You're spot on. Right at the start, I knew that if this was going to succeed, I needed this to be as realistic from a user experience perspective as possible. So that was one of the things that we were looking at trying to create. But beyond that, something that I didn't really know until I got into it was how stretched these teams are. And if we're going to succeed at all, have any measure of success, this needs to be, this can't add any operational work for anybody within the organization. I personally would rather do 3 hours of work than have somebody in one of my partner organizations do 20 minutes of work. If I'm really going to succeed, I need to make this as easy to activate, simple to use, and scalable from a team perspective. Otherwise, to your point, it can be the greatest idea in the world. They're not going to buy into it. So I've tried to create something that is easy to activate, does not require extra employees, doesn't require somebody to stay 45 minutes after the game when they're ready to go home. And that's been difficult, but we've worked through that, and we've come up with something that again allows us to put in a little extra effort on the back end in order to make this work. And to answer your original question, what is essentially required is really just for the team to send us this footage. Ideally, we prefer it in a clean feed where we can we don't have to scrub it. What the Spurs were able to do, they gave us 6 videos pregame, all the quarters, halftime of just fan shots, and we were able to take that, run it through our platform, easy, simple. It took them about 20 minutes to do after the game. They were willing to do that. Probably because we were doing this for free, and we certainly appreciated that. But we've had other partners who will give me a 4-hour game tape. Now, that is not the preferred way to take in data. That's definitely, again, that's intensive on my end, but I would rather do that and put in that time and make it as easy as possible for my partners over, say, not having a partnership.
Yep. So it's simply, grabbing the footage from the control room and sending that footage to you, and that's job done from a game by game proposition.
That's it. Dropbox, FTP, whatever's easiest.
And then from a turnaround point of view, it's just a matter of you then doing your back end work and then it becoming live, by the next morning if it's a night game. That's the way that it rolls out.
You know, it depends. If we get the content like the Spurs are giving it to us, clean feed broken out by fan footage, we could have it up in 20 minutes. If it's a longer game tape, then yeah, we like 12 hours to process. One of the things that we learned with the Spurs in particular is, you know, initially we tried to get it out as quickly as possible. We got the footage up the night of, and our engagement levels weren't that great. So we actually tried a few different times, and as it turns out, waiting until the next day, specifically around 7 or 8 o'clock, was really the best time to go back out to fans who had given us their contact info, left their email addresses. We were then able to reach out to them, make them aware that the content was live, and our engagement numbers were actually threefold what they were getting it out at night, for whatever reason. I can take a few guesses, but you know, as it turns out, I personally believe that that's because the expectation right now is not really to have this footage. Fans are just excited to have it. So yeah, the expectation isn't to have it now or have it live. Ultimately, we'd love to be as close to live as possible, but I think we have a period where we can work with where we are now and where the technology is, and get it out night of or day after, and still be impactful where we want to be.
But it does sort of fit in there, because you're right, when you're at the game, and I think, you know, Mark Cuban said it in the chat I had with him, you want people to be engaged with the entertainment and what's happening at the game, during the game. So it really does fit itself in that post-game activity to go, oh, I was on the big screen, I'm going to go check in and read the recap and all of that kind of stuff, consume the content from a post-game point of view, and if they're part of that, you know, all the better. So, you know, I think that's where it does fit in, hey, here's the recap of yesterday's game. Were you there? Make sure, you know, if you've got, grab your, you know, your shot on the Jumbotron, that kind of thing. So at the moment, you're pitching it to teams and venues, stadiums that obviously activate their Jumbotron a lot. But what I'm interested in is, What type of people in organisations are most interested in the topic, because it can sort of, Famous Fan can sort of cut across multiple departments, but what's the biggest feature that's sort of drawing interest from different people in organisations?
Yeah, you know, I'd say that there are three parts of the organisation that are interested in this, and if you wouldn't mind, can I tell you a little bit about that interesting? Or
yeah, go okay, for it. Because that's a piece, like, I see it's both a benefit and a problem, in that you've got multiple people interested, and then when multiple people are interested, there starts to being a bit of finger pointing of, yeah, you get it, no, you get it, and you sort of got to get that shared experience. So that's the bit I want to sort of dive in on, whether the question outlaid that or not. But yeah, take us through who's interested and how the benefits relate to those different parties.
So I think that the first line of contact for us is typically the game presentation director. You know, they're the ones who see all of these different fan shots. They see how the crowd reacts, and they also receive phone calls not all day, but frequently, of fans saying, "Hey, I was on the Jumbotron. I want this content." And there's no way to deliver that. And if they try to scroll through there, you know, the person says, "Hey, I was on in the second quarter wearing an orange shirt." It's not. I was wearing the LeBron jersey. You know, it's not. It's not really scalable, and it is an opportunity. So they immediately see that, and they're typically ones who say, "Well, is this going to add work to what I'm doing?" And I'm very quick to say, you know, again, no. This is something that shouldn't, and it needs to make sense for you. So that's typically the first one that I go to. Ultimately, after that, once I give an overview of what we're doing, they typically like to loop in marketing or sponsorship. You know, we see a real opportunity to sponsor these images, as they're essentially a digital representation of the Jumbotron that we can recreate and put sponsors, clickable sponsors within that. That's absolutely a monetizable asset, and it's one that sponsorship teams feel that they can sell, or they can give as add-ons to existing premium sponsors. So that's valuable on that end.
Don't skip over that piece. You know, because I just had a really good chat with Joe Gottfried at Maple Leaf Sports, and he's really in that digital partner integration. So when a fan goes to the screen to show their see their Jumbotron shot, you can reskin and rebrand the Jumbotron, whether it be sideboards or banners underneath with a particular sponsor. They can be clickable. They can be ticketing offers. They can be the fans, the team's own things. So that's the commercial side of it, the fact that you can monetize this digital property as people are going to it, either with a partner or a sponsor brand or with your own internal ticket sales, that kind of thing. So is that's where the discussion happens with either marketing in selling tickets or the commercial teams around monetizing the product?
Yeah, so we have the ability to, as we digitally recreate this Jumbotron, to add customizations. And the customizations that our partners typically want are twofold. First is a link to tickets and merchandise, which will live on all of these photos, typically on the left side. So people who come to this, either the site after the game or view this content on social media, on some type of shared network, can see that link and then go to that directly. So that's a marketing opportunity for the teams. But beyond that, if we're digitally recreating this Jumbotron, we can make anything within that Jumbotron clickable. We can make existing sponsorship clickable, or we can create customizations that a sponsorship team can sell. Ultimately, we believe there's fantastic opportunity as fans are not only receiving this unique, somewhat viral footage, but they're sharing it. They're sharing it on their social pages. They're vouching for it. They're doing it in a way that's very exciting and again promotes sharing and engagement from people in their network. The other thing that I think makes this unique is when I look up at a Jumbotron at, say, the TD Garden in Boston, and I see Putnam and Fidelity, I expect to see that. I expect to see an ad that's not intrusive to me. So as we're putting ads on this Jumbotron that somebody's sharing socially, they're not going to think twice about doing so because it's natural. It's what's expected. It almost makes it more authentic to have an ad on there. So,
you've got the same thing, you know, happening in EA Sports and NBA 2K. You know, if you go and look at a stadium that doesn't have sponsorship around it, it doesn't look authentic. Like, again, if you showed a unbranded Jumbotron, the fans wouldn't actually be able to recognize it. So, you know, yeah. Just being able to switch out those things, it is, like you said before, it's what you expect to see. So it does become appealing to a sponsor that is in that digital space.
Sure.
So you've got your game entertainment, your commercial and marketing point of view, and you see you've got those different benefit pieces. Is the other sort of department or the other interested party CRM and your data guys in being able to get some of that data of the fans that are in the stadium? They may have come in on a guest ticket. You know, you may not know them specifically. Is that another part of the puzzle to be able to capture some of that data of all these fans sharing their pictures?
Yeah, Sean, the other part is definitely the digital team. And ultimately, when I speak to potential partners, I break down the benefits of Famous Fan into four separate categories. One, I would say, is web traffic. We allow teams to host this content, whether it be on their web page or on their app, and fans are actually directed to the team's page. This is a team's content, and they deserve to benefit in terms of web traffic. That would be one. Two is data, as you pointed out. During the game, when a fan comes to the platform and the footage is not available, we request emails. When a fan is sharing content, once it's available, we ask them to verify socially. So we're actually able to get their metrics, their user data, demographic info, emails, and we share that with the team, obviously, as part of our partnership. Three, as I mentioned before, would be monetization of the content, and four would be the authentic promotion of not only the sponsors who are on this Jumbotron, but also the team that we're partnered with, who is then associated with their fans' personal social network in a way that's very organic. So one, two, three, four, I would say, is a lot of that does touch the digital team in addition to, you know, the other two teams that I just mentioned.
So diving into, you know, you've talked about data or data, depending on where my listeners are. Everyone knows that I'll say it as data. What were some of the results you can share out of the Spurs trial on, you know, how many people are capturing, you know, going in and finding their shots? What's the kind of share and the reach of the shares? Have you got some of that data around the Spurs trial?
Yeah, sure. So at an average Spurs game at the AT&T Center, there's about 18,000 fans, of which nearly 1,800 fans will appear on the Jumbotron. And that right there is a number that a lot of teams don't realize it's that many. It, you know, 10% is a really large number to have this experience, but it is in fact 1,800 at the AT&T Center. Of those 1,800, just over 72% of fans access NBA.com/Spurs/famous fan, which is a very, very strong hit rate. And in our opinion, frankly, about three times what both we and the Spurs expected. It's with relative little brand promotion and little awareness as well. So I believe that as we get into our next season and we continue to promote this and fans are more aware of it, that number will even increase. But just something to mention about those 72% of fans, they actually spend an average of 3 minutes on the platform. So they're not just coming to the site and saying, oh, this is cool, and clicking off. They're actually engaging for a meaningful amount of time. They're clicking through, they're watching footage, they're sharing. They're really doing what we want them to do. So from a validation standpoint, that was really tremendous to get those results.
And so I mean, that's a really key point, you know, just one, how many people actually end up on the screen is one. And then how can you further engage those? And one of the things that we've always been doing is around the digital team and encouraging fans. And this is why, you know, every stadium now has Wi-Fi, because they want fans to be able to share their experience and, you know, develop that FOMO, fear of missing out, and really promoting the live experience. And that's where this, you know, fits. You know, it does enhance the game entertainment thing and get people to brag that they're there. So I think that's the... You know, for me, a real vital piece. Fan engagement. I've sort of had my say on fan engagement as a word, and the fact that it's a really hot buzzword and it's being used by a lot of people in a lot of different areas. You know, Famous Fan is promoting itself as a fan engagement tool platform. What are some of the unique selling points of Famous Fan that sort of set it apart from, you know, other platforms that are in the space that are sort of hitting that mark of game entertainment, game experience, data capture, social sharing?
Yeah, sure. So when I think of fan engagement, and you're right, Sean, it's such a buzzword and everyone's trying to enhance the fan experience, I think of it in two ways. First, I think you need to really improve or in some ways enhance the in-arena experience, which I think that, you know, we do, although our platform only engages 10% of the arena. Those are individuals who have an experience that they never forget. They go home, they tell people about it, they share it. You know, you ask somebody, they'll be like, oh yeah, I was in the Jumbotron, you know, at an X game. They remember it. And if you give them a moment, they're not only going to share it, they're going to reshare it. And it's going to be something that's widely viewed, widely consumed. And it's also going to drum up interest in that event. So A, again, I kind of touched on both of them there, but enhance the in-arena experience. And then two is giving fans the ability to share this and benefit from it digitally and have cross-platform promotion that not only exists in the venue but out as well. And just to that point, what I think one of the things that we leverage and we really do well is we give our teams, our partners, the ability to benefit from this traffic. We don't have our own native app. We believe that, again, this is the team's content and they should be able to drive app downloads or web traffic or whatever it is they're trying to do, whatever their strategy is. We believe that we can help them do that.
I think that's a really good point, because I do see a lot of different, whether they be apps or platforms that, you know, and some of them we know really well, you know, Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, that say, hey, we've got a great platform, send your fans to us, send your fans to our network, they'll have a great time over here. And that's a very common pitch into sports teams: come over to our great platform, when teams themselves and leagues themselves are trying to build out their own platform and infrastructure and things like page views and time on site are really vital. So I think the fact that you're inside the fence and building inside their infrastructure is a good way of going, because it's a harder sell to say, hey, come to our network and we're building out our network. And we've seen apps rise and fall in recent times that have pitched that strategy. So yeah, I do believe the you know, when people, you know, and I'm constantly a bit of a gatekeeper for my clients, when products and that are pitched in, I always look at it at the selfish reasons of the people who are pitching, saying, "Oh, once we build out our audience of all these different teams, then we've got a network and it's a data play and we can, you know, roll from there." Whereas, you know, you're really going to the heart of what the digital team and the team itself's goals are to bring more traffic in, drive more traffic throughout their site and be part of their ecosystem.
To just build on that, Sean, you know, I mentioned if I'm going to succeed, this has to be easy for teams. The other part of, well, am I going to succeed, is this needs to drive real value to my partners. And value, as we just covered, can be a lot of different things. It can be traffic, data, actual monetization, digital promotion. But whatever it is to that partner, I have to be able to deliver that or else I'm going to fail. So that's really what we're focused on is, and we realize that it's going to vary per partner and per team, but you know, we fully have embraced that, and that's why, you know, we don't have our own we have a website, but you know, we want to host on teams' websites, we want to host within their app, we want this to be easy to activate, no hardware costs, no employees, no installs. There cannot be any barriers, to your point.
So what are some of the lessons you've learned running a startup, especially in the world of sports? What are some of the things you've learned in running Famous Fan?
Yeah, so there have been a lot of lessons. One of the main things that I've learned that I didn't really think too much of is, you know, how many industries do you try to sell into that only have 30 companies? And that is essentially, you know, the NBA is 30 teams, the NHL is 30 teams. If I go to colleges, you know, there's 172 college teams that have jumbotrons and over 10,000 people that we could partner with. But at the end of the day, if I'm going to the main leagues, there's so few teams and they all talk to one another. And it's reputation is important, relationships are important. And if I'm going to succeed, again, to that point, it's crucial that I get the teams early on who are willing to be entrepreneurial, who want to try something, who want to work with me, and my strategy is to service them as best that I can, and know that, well, if they can be brand evangelists for me, and they can go out and tell their friends and their counterparts at different teams, then that's my best chance of building this out.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Good news and bad news travels really fast in a really small world that sports business is. Recording this at the start of SB Week, Sports Business Week, that was founded by Russell Scabetti. It's a really small world. And so, yeah, I think you're on the right track doing the, you know, providing value over servicing your clients, because for the teams, so the vendors that have done that, they're the ones that I've seen that have got the best success. When you're starting out, I had a question around your pricing strategy. When you develop a product that is completely new, has no benchmark, has no, you know, effective competitor in the space, how do you approach that? And, you know, you sort of mentioned it early on when your initial pitch was, this has got great value, I think this is awesome, they'll pay for this, and not quite understanding, you know, I guess the market and the appetite and those kind of things. How do you go about pricing something that is completely new, you know, to the market? What were some of your thoughts, and what has been the pricing strategy so far in how you're going about sort of setting up the pricing for Famous Fan?
Well, what I did first was we calculated, well, what is the value of each website visit? What is the value of each Facebook like? What is the value of each email collected? And we totaled it up and we came up with a massive number. And, you know, I looked at it, I said, oh, this would be great. And then I realized people are going to laugh at me if I show them this. And so I threw away the standard, you know, business school pricing model. And I talked to my partners and I said, you know, what is the most valuable part of this to you? And obviously, if they're able to sell sponsorship and generate revenue, then that's going to, you know, that's an actual monetizable portion that could sort of anchor the pricing model. But in the absence of that, it's really, well, what does the market dictate? And we've been fortunate enough to have partners come forward and say, well, this is worth something to us, and they've set a price. And, you know, on one hand, you know, you want to let the market dictate, but I don't want to lose any potential clients because they look at that and they say that doesn't work for us. Depending on your market size, depending on, again, your potential sponsors or deals that you have in place, you know, I mean, you might be able to afford the market. You might not. You might pay more. I mean, not that I'm going out and trying to price gouge, but
the thing is, it's so, yeah, Sorry, go.
No. I was just going to say it's, you know, you got to kind of, when you're growing something and when you're building something, you got to throw, you know, normal pricing structures out the window and do what works for each partner.
Because
you want to facilitate business. You don't want that to be a barrier to any potential partnership that's going to grow your business.
Just on the pricing piece, because it's very much, you know, it's different for, you know, if we looked at the NFL that has a short season and only X amount of games to compared to the NBA and the NHL that have 40 or so home games, to, you know, Major League Baseball that has, you know, so many home games, because your product is game based, but it's sometimes you've got to work out that scale and how that works. And then the other part is how well it can be monetized. If a sponsor wants to be part of it every single game, then that can also set the price. So it's a bit, you're sort of in that trying to find your level at the moment and working with your teams to find out how they can best monetize it, but then also present the value of, well, what's the value of, you know, generating 1,500 or 2,000 emails every game as another part of, hey, here's the value proposition. So it's a bit of, like we were saying before, that you're hitting up multiple teams and multiple benefits. You've got to do that on the pricing side when you're doing that justification, because someone's going to say, hey, Josh, why is it this price? You need to be able to come back and say, well, it's because you can sell it for this and you get this amount of emails and it drives this many more ticket sales, those kind of pieces. And you're sort of feeling that you're still in that space where it's you're moving it around and being flexible and trying to fit for what, you know, the capabilities of the team you're pitching with.
Yeah, you know, we don't want to lose any business on account of price, and to that point, there are some teams who can monetize greater than others. We believe that even without monetization, based on the fan experience perspective and the fact that, again, as you appropriately mentioned, we're able to get X amount of users and emails per game, that in and of itself is valuable, but we are still in the process of figuring that out. But to circle back and answer your initial question, we have a license fee that is typically for the entire season. It's a per game fee. So, you know, if somebody, ideally it's the entire season, but if somebody wants to work with us for 10 games or 10 select games, say weekend games, we can do that as well. And that will allow them not only the advantages to using Famous Fan that we discussed, but any and all customizations and the right to sell the sponsorship as we discussed, and 100% own that, no rev share associated.
So I wanted to, wrap this up, sort of taking the conversation back to the beginning around the pitch. And it's I want to take you through this process. It's a process that I've developed with Steve Vallis at Chunky Media in working with businesses to better understand their pitch. So we've entitled it the Chunky Pitch. And so I'm going to take you through the process, and hopefully we'll see, and hopefully the listeners will see how it can work. So what is the key problem, if you were to describe it in a tweet, because I like to keep things succinct, what's the key problem you're looking to solve around the game experience with Famous Fan? So if you were to pitch to someone,
yep,
you know how, and then you would list out the problem, how would you finish that sentence?
So I think that the problem is essentially that there's this incredible content that that fans have no access to, and that the teams are unable to monetize or use in any way that benefits their organization.
Okay, so let's do that just from the fan's point of view. The problem for the fan. So the problem for the fan is, you know how, fans are super excited that they're on the Jumbotron, but they can't share it, right? Does that make sense?
Absolutely, sure.
Right, so how do you go about solving that problem? So you answer that piece with the what we do. What we do is...
What we do is we make Jumbotron content available to fans at sporting events.
Exactly, right? And then you finish it off with an extraordinary fact, right? And so this is where you can say, in fact, you know, X many fans share their Famous Fan moment every game, reaching over X many people. right? So you've just gone and amped it up. So I'm going to let that marinate with you for a second, because we're going to come back to you and you're going to do the famous fan version of the chunky pitch. Well, I'm going to give you the Sports Geek podcast chunky pitch, just to give you an example. You know how hard it's hard to learn about how other sports succeed in digital. What we do is interview the best in sports to share their best practices and fan engagement strategies. In fact, we have 100 hours of interviews downloaded by over 150,000 times from around the world. All right, so that effectively tells you exactly what the Sports Geek podcast does. If I did it, and the thing is, you can do it and reframe it for different audiences. So again, from a Sports Geek point of view, if I pitch Sports Geek as an agency, you know how the sports digital landscape is constantly evolving? What we do is keep your team on top of the trends to make sure that you stay best practice. In fact, we share the best practice with clients in Australia, New Zealand, and in the USA. Okay, so it's really, you know, back to that elevator pitch, you can frame this mechanism with any particular business. So now that you know the mechanism, give us the famous fan version again. And just for listeners, like this, I've tried to keep this as impro style as possible. I haven't briefed Josh on this, so you are getting this for the first time as of 2 minutes ago. So you want to give it a go. You want to give it a crack, Josh?
Really put me on the spot, Sean.
No, sure. That's the idea. So. I'll give you mine first.
Yeah, no, let me give it a crack, Sean.
Okay. You know how?
You know how at every sporting event, thousands of fans appear on the Jumbotron?
What we do is
we give them a way to download and share that content for free in a way that spreads the brand of the team and their sponsors.
Amazing fact. In fact, we...
Typically engage over 70% of fans who appear on the Jumbotron during a given game.
There you go. Right. So, and that, like I said, that can be, and this is where you can refine it to say, how is it going to be refined to the game entertainment person? How is it going to be refined to the commercial person? How is it going to be refined to the digital person? So you can say, you know how fans expect to see sponsorship on the Jumbotron. What we do is take that sponsorship from the Jumbotron into the digital world. In fact, sponsors can now have clickable banners as fans share their pictures. And so you can sort of take it and spin it whatever way you like. So that's going to be your homework to be able to build out your chunky pitch for the different industries, different, I guess, use cases that it can be. But does it make sense and sort of give you some help in understanding how it might work?
Yeah, absolutely. No, you're onto something, Sean.
Well, it has worked really well as a bit of, you know, when you say, and normally it starts with, hey, can you describe your business in 140 characters? And they normally trot out the what's on their brochure. And it's a bit clunky and here's what we do and it's probably for one person, whereas when you start thinking about, oh, this is what it is to the fan, this is what it is to, because you have to be as a someone that's pitching, you have to be pliable to go, oh, that person's all focused on the data, so I have to give them the data version of my pitch, whereas, oh, that person's the game entertainment person, they just want to make sure that everyone is sharing their experience at the game. So I think that's where it's quite valuable, and that can start feathering out the different, marketing material and pitches, or, you know, email scripts, or how you speak on the phone, those kind of things. And it's really, you know, what we've found in doing sort of workshops with startups and that kind of stuff, that it really helps refine what you're trying to do for the particular market. So you've now got your chunky pitch. The last thing, and this is what we'll probably discuss off air, how can people contact you if they're interested in Famous Fan? in finding out more, in maybe getting a demo, talking about more about how it's working with the Spurs or Duke. How can people get in touch with you?
Yeah, I would love an opportunity to speak with anybody about Famous Fan who's interested in learning more. I can be reached at josh@famousfan.com. I encourage listeners to check out our website at www.famousfan.com. From there, you can actually see some of the work that we've done with various partners. And we're at a point right now where we're heading into this this arena sports season. We're really looking to add partners and work with different teams. So to that extent, if you're interested in discussing what a full season partnership might look like, or even just a couple game pilot, we're in a position where we're still willing to do work to prove our value. So I would encourage you to reach out. Thank you.
No worries, Josh. Well, thank you very much for coming to the podcast, and thank you very much for being the first, and I don't want to say guinea pig, but to go through the process. And I did say to Josh, I quoted Sam Hinkie before we started recording. I said, trust the process, in that sort of go through the pitch, but then also having that to have that backwards and forwards around his product. I really appreciate you being so open about Famous Fan, and I look forward to catching up with you soon, whether it be in Boston or in another part of the States when I'm over there.
Fantastic. Thanks so much, Sean.
Sign up for Sports Geek News at sportsgeekhq.com/signup now.
Thanks again to Josh Byron for really participating in that experiment. There was a lot of trust there by Josh to jump in and tackle things like the chunky pitch, and he went through it. And I really enjoyed the chat, and I really do like the idea of the product. So please either send him an email or hit him up with a message on the Sports Biz Slack. If you're not in the Sports Biz Slack, we have now just passed 500 people in the Sports Business Slack. So you can join that by going to sportsgeekhq.com/Slack, funnily enough. Josh's handle is Josh J Byron, J-B-I-R-E-N, the same as his Twitter handle. So as I discussed on the pod and with Josh around Famous Fan, it's something that is loved by the game presentation and entertainment crew. So please, if you work in the digital side, if you work in the CRM side, if you work in the technology side, and you like this as an idea, please pass this podcast on to those people. Get them to have a listen, and then potentially, you know, send them to sportsgeekhq.com/famousfan. I will pass on all your details to Josh, and the more people that I can pass on, the better I'll be able to work on Josh to get you guys a great deal. Because there's really a couple of ways you can do it, running out of trial, either on your marquee games on a Saturday night or on nights that you have specifically set up for millennials or students where you want to boost that social media shares post-game. Or if you're in the place, similar to Joe Gottfried talking about the podcast with Maple Leafs Sports and Entertainment, if you've got sponsors that want more inventory, it's a really great product that you can provide game-by-game type packages for your sponsors. So go to sportsgeekhq.com/famousfan, and there'll be all the info there from this podcast, ability to check out the show notes, but then also fill out a quick form, and we'll pass on your details for a trial or to sign up for Famous Fan. I'd really like your feedback both on the product, for those of you who will use it, but also just on this format. Is it a good format? Do you want me to do more of these? Are you a startup trying to get into the world of sports and entertainment? Please let me know, because I want to make this valuable and viable, both for you, the listener, most importantly, and then also being of some value to these startups trying to get into the space. A few things, a bit of housekeeping to wrap up. A big congratulations to Russell Scabetti for a very successful SB Week 16 Sports Business Week. He finally got to 50 cities. I will check in with Russell on the final number and the final dollars raised for the V Foundation, but any money raised to hopefully get a cure for cancer is good money. So I will make sure I find out what that final number is and either put it, I will mention it on the next podcast or put it in the next Sports Geek News. And on the Sports Geek News, that sort of leads me to a point where I have to apologize for those of you who are on the Sports Geek News email list. Last week, I was playing around with some new tools. I'm currently migrating my list from MailChimp to Drip. Drip is a marketing automation tool. It's recently been purchased by Lead Pages. If you've gone to any of my pages that I normally talk about on the podcast, sportsgeekhq.com/slack/famousfan/SGN, they're all Lead Pages. And so Lead Pages being a really good tool to drive inbound leads, they've recently purchased Drip. So I've been in the process of migrating my MailChimp list to Drip, and it's more automation sequence focused than list focused as MailChimp is. And while I was doing the migration, I accidentally put people into the wrong campaign, and so everyone got a notification that they just downloaded the ebook, which you get when you sign up for Sports Geek News. And unfortunately, that got sent to everybody. And sometimes, and I'm sure you've all done it, you just have that feeling in your stomach that you want to hit the unsend button, but you can't. So I'm putting my hand up. It happens to the best of us. I'm really enjoying using Drip now. I'm getting my head around how it works. They've got some really cool features around workflow in that someone can sign up for an email, and then if they book a meeting via Calendly, which is a tool that I use to book meetings, they can be then marked as a prospect or moved into another workflow where they'll be sent another email or a notification email will come to me, those kind of things. So I'll share some of those lessons as I've just shared now in the following episodes. But please, if you've got a question about that or specifically around Famous Fan, please send me an email, sean@sportsgeekhq.com. And until next episode, thank you very much for listening to the Sports Geek Podcast. My name is Sean Callanan, and you've been listening to the Sports Geek Podcast. Cheers.
Like the Sports Geek Podcast? Find us on facebook.com/sportsgeek. Check out which teams work with Sports Geek at sportsgeekhq.com/clients. Please leave a review on iTunes. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/iTunes. Thanks for listening to the Sports Geek Podcast.